Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, happy Friday, you guys. Someone in here is excited. Jake already up and screaming on a Friday. Seahawks aren't even playing Sunday. I mean, we're going to be talking about the game, but...
Because it's Friday.
You're right. I'm very excited for the weekend. That's why I'm excited. Personally, but that's just me.
I'm pumped.
A big weekend in Seattle. Obviously, you've got the Seahawks. That's coming up on Monday night. Before then, you have the Seattle Kraken with their home opener. I'm very excited for that one. Are you excited, you guys?
Oh.
I know you are, but.
Extremely excited.
Are we excited?
And, I know.
And I'm sure that some point in time in this show that we are going to be guessing as to what the Kraken are going to do. What is the pageantry that is going to occur with the Seattle Kraken in their home opener? Because you know they're pulling out all the stops. You know that this is going to be one heck of a production and that, you know, everybody's excited for, obviously, hockey to kick off here in Seattle. But they're going to enhance that moment.
Now,
and I can't wait for that.
Because I'm a sellout, I would love it if Climate Pledge Arena in Jeff Bezos and Amazon did something where it's like you go and, yeah, you have the game. But then they're like, okay, now we have Amazon Prime deals. You scan this QR code.
Whoa, yeah.
Like, not even about the game anymore. It's like, of course I want a new TV. Move over, Kraken. This is more important right now. And it's a huge weekend. I'm really, really excited for it. And we're going to have some awesome guests. NHL analyst Ray Ferraro going to join us. And we're going to kind of preview this game a little bit with him. Before that, though, I'm assuming that both of you watched Thursday Night Football and that all of you listening either watched, if you weren't already watching the NLCS, I'm assuming that you were watching Thursday Night Football, right?
Oh, yes.
So I've decided that what the Browns did last night is exactly how Pete Carroll wants to win this game. I mean, the comparisons are a little eerie in certain ways. So the Browns are heading into this game, or rather they headed into this game because they won it against Denver without their starting quarterback. Not only did they not have their starting quarterback, they also didn't have their starting running back, and they didn't even have their backup running back. All of those guys were injured or on the sidelines, okay? So you look at Seattle. Seattle doesn't have Russell Wilson or Chris Carson. And Alex Collins could be hobbled with a hip injury. So you're heading into a game when you're Cleveland, and soon if you're Seattle, without some starters that you've been depending on. And instead, the Browns go out and beat the Denver Broncos, number 5 overall defense, and did it with a very balanced attack. They had 33 pass attempts, 33 carries. I mean, like 50-50 balanced attack. Not only that, this is one of the, you know, this is actually one of the cooler stories. Have you ever heard of Dearness Johnson?
I mean, heard about
him.
You'd
be forgiven for not like knowing a lot about him.
No, didn't know anything about this guy until this game.
This is actually one of the cooler stories to come out of this week. So he's a guy that he went undrafted out of South Florida. Okay, he goes to try out for the Saints roster. He doesn't make it. So then he gets a call from a friend out in Key West, and his friend out in Key West is like, "Hey, I'm fishing out here for people. Like, I'm a private fisherman or whatever. Do you want to come out and work with me for a bit?" And Dearness Johnson doesn't have any other opportunities right now in football. So he's like, "Well, shoot, I need a job." So he goes out to Key West and works as a fisherman with this guy for something like 2 or 3 months while he waits for another opportunity. So in the meantime, he's making a ton of calls and reaching out to a bunch of different people. And that includes calls to GMs of the Alliance of American Football League. You guys remember that. They were kind of coming out at similar time as the XFL.
The Fyre Fest of football.
The Fyre Fest of football. We talked about it endlessly. So he's making a ton of calls to GMs, being like, "Hey, do you have any openings? Hey, do you have any openings? Can I sign up?" Finally, he gets a call back from a GM that's like, "Okay, we had an injury. You can come on." So he signs on to one of those teams. And he plays pretty well. The team does pretty well. But obviously, the league folds. And that's another story we've already covered that's just fascinating. But I don't have time to get into it. So he's like, "What do I do?" Goes to work out for the Packers, the Patriots, the Browns. Nothing comes from it. Then, I'm telling you, this story is crazy. Then, one of the Browns running backs, like the fourth running back or something, decides to just quit football. Like, he decides, like, "I'm walking away from the NFL if I'm good."
Mm-hmm.
So the Browns still have Dearness's information because he obviously was there for a workout. So they give him a call. He goes to camp, and he's stuck with the team since then. So he's actually been there a little while. He had in his very first start, this is his first start. This is why we all love football. His first start after this insane road to the NFL, he finishes with 146 yards. 146 yards. And he does it in a touchdown. And not only that, but he picks up something like an 8-yard or 12-yard carry to ice the game, to give them another first down so that they can take a knee and end it. It's a phenomenal story. Anyways, so that's just an aside of why, kind of reminding us why we all love football. But I really do think that this is kind of the ideal game for Pete Carroll. Here's my question for you, though, Jake. Can the Seahawks do this? Because I will add that we have seen weirder things happen. We just watched a guy who had this incredible journey to the NFL, who was not a known or tested commodity, get his first start and rush for 146 yards. Not only that, but we saw the number two ranked running defense with the Saints give up 131 yards in week 5 to Washington, not to Christian McCaffrey, not to the Packers, but to the Washington football team, to Tyler Heinicke. Okay, not 100 to Tyler Heinicke, but he had something like 40-ish.
Yeah.
So we've seen weirder things happen, but I will add that the Browns have the number one offensive line in the league and the number one run game in the league. So they've got a lot of things in place for that to happen. So I'm torn, Jake, about how to feel. Do I want to feel like you never know what can happen in the NFL? Every game could be a surprise, just like the Browns had with this one and D'Ernest Johnson. It was such a fun surprise, reminding us why we love football. Or the Seahawks heading into this one with a lot of the same stuff on paper that the Browns did, but just aren't going to find the same success. Well, I can't tell.
This game is 100% the inspiration Pete Carroll needed. Like, if you're talking about the vision that he had, then watching it being manifested into any game, I have to imagine Pete Carroll was a pretty big fan of what he witnessed. And you love every aspect about it. But this to me is, you mentioned some of those key differences. They are huge differences. Number one, dominant offensive line for the Cleveland Browns that the organization made an effort to invest in, right? Major effort across the board, depth pieces, your five starters, high draft picks or heavy investment in free agency. With the Seattle Seahawks, as Ray Roberts said to us, he believes that they have three Pro Bowl level players, which is a good group. Don't get me wrong. At all, but you still got Kyle Fuller, you still got Brandon Schell that's coming back from an injury. Is this group, can they be that dominant offensive line, for a full 60 minutes, knowing that the Saints know exactly what's coming and the offensive line can still dominate anyways despite that? The run game also for the Cleveland Browns has always been an emphasis under Kevin Stefanski. They didn't reinvent the wheel here, right? Yeah, they leaned into their running game or they were very balanced. But, Stacey, this is who the Cleveland Browns are. This is who they've always been with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and Baker Mayfield. This group has been extremely balanced and even at times have been extremely run heavy. So they were just sticking to what they do best. And then finally, I think the Broncos, can we say that they've been exposed for the team and their defense that they really are?
They're a good defense. Even if they aren't the number five defense in the league, they're still a solid defense.
Stacey, I don't know.
They're a lot better than Seattle.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't know if they really are that good.
I think they're a defense that is not the number one defense in the league, but was going against the number one offensive line.
Look, when you start your season off against a gauntlet like the Broncos did, the Jags, the Jets, and the Giants, that is going to show you how great of a team you've got.
Their stats are
so
inflated defensively.
Why do we have any other reason outside of that schedule
Giants,
to
Jags,
think that the
Jets,
Denver Broncos
and then
aren't
they
a good
lose.
Defense?
They've lost four straight since then,
they've
and
got
their defense
so
has
many
not.
Playmakers on that defense. I think that the truth is somewhere in the middle.
They have not been that good.
I don't think they're a bad defense. I think that they are. So you're saying you think that Cleveland's success was more attributed to the Broncos being a bad defense than it was to the Cleveland Browns being a great running
offense. No, That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that they are a great group up front that took advantage of a maybe above average defense. This isn't a defense that is the Saints, who are truly, I believe, one of the top five rush defenses in the league. I think that the Denver Broncos, their statistics are very inflated based off of the first three games playing some of the worst teams in the NFL, and then they've been exposed since then. That's what I'm saying. And now you have this situation with the Seahawks. If it can turn around for them, can they make it work? Can they do this? I believe that they can. I believe that they have the potential to be able to do that based off of what we saw in the second half from this offensive line. But also, it's a very different game. When you come out from the jump, the first snap, and you are declaring to everyone, this is who you're going to be and this is what you're going to do, you have to be on another level. You have to be extremely dominant at the line of scrimmage. And I don't think the Saints are a bunch of pushovers or a group that has been inflated in terms of their stats. And you mentioned giving up 130-something yards to the Washington football team. That's also Heinicke with some random scrambles mixed in there. So if you're telling me that Geno Smith's going to be actively a part of a traditional running attack, or he's going to pick up 40 yards and scramble yards, then you know that's going to be a different ball game. But I see this very much as the Seahawks trying to do this from the traditional sense, and that is going to be a unique challenge to them as they're going up against a pretty good front.
I see what you mean. I see what you're saying, which is like, look, not only was last night's story pretty cool, but you're talking about a Browns offense that is better up front than Seattle going against a defense that is worse than the Saints against the run. And so they're going to be a little better matched, and that story is going to work out for the Browns. Meanwhile, Seattle, not as good a run team, and the Saints, much better a run defense than Denver. So you're saying it's like push those two parts even further away.
Yes, it can. And that's not to say that, look, the Seahawks can't get it done on Monday night. But what I'm saying is that the Cleveland Browns and the Seattle Seahawks aren't necessarily, could they be have similar storylines? I don't think they're the same team. I don't think they're the same exact team and have the ability and the confidence level should be, well, look at what the Cleveland Browns did. They did it, so therefore the Seahawks can do it. I think there's different circumstances here. And then the other thing is, look, I don't know if in Ralph and Bellevue would agree with me about Geno Smith here, and I'm sorry about this, but you know, we also have to look at the fact that Case Keenum is a better quarterback, in my opinion, has had better success in this league than Geno Smith. That doesn't mean that Geno can't have a good game, but even him, you know, 33 pass attempts, he didn't light the world on fire, but he managed the game well, and that's something that Geno's going to have to do. With the Saints, you can't just solely rely on the running game. Geno Smith's going to have to make plays, and he's going to have to manage this game flawlessly.
My guy Ralph in Bellevue did not ask for this. He called in one time a week ago to be like, maybe Geno's going to be great. I think Geno's going to be fantastic.
And it
has been brought
up
on this show now multiple times.
Because he's
and every time Geno has a great game, we're going to be like, shout out to Geno and shout out to Ralph.
Exactly. Like, you tie yourself to that bold of a take.
Oh, I love our callers.
You were going to be remembered forever.
All right. Right now, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Kraken open Climate Pledge Arena on Saturday night against their rivals, those pesky Vancouver Canucks. What is the real headline?
An even bigger headline. Seattle reasserts itself as a sports destination on Saturday night.
Yeah, baby. That's what I like. That to me is what's so cool. And what is so special is, yes, having hockey here and have it be a major fabric of the sports community moving forward, but it just continues to keep putting Seattle as one of the better sports markets in the country. And we all know just the last step. We all know the last step for this, and that is to get NBA basketball back into Seattle, and that will complete the full circle. But I mean, it's very cool to see these steps being taken. You have another major, you know, sport being introduced here into Seattle, and I cannot wait for tomorrow night to watch the Seattle Kraken be able to, you know, kick things off in Climate Pledge Arena and for it to really, really feel like official. Like it's one thing having on the road, it's one thing watching on Root Sports, it's one thing that. It's another thing to have your home crowd be able to experience it and to be able to, you know, cheer on their own team. This is when it's going to be, to me, the moment where it's just like, man, this is amazing.
Well, and there are so many Seattle teams that have had so much success the Storm, the Sounders, obviously, the Seahawks for the last 10 years. I know they're struggling now. And the Mariners have struggled, yes, but it feels like they're on the come up, and it feels like they're on the verge of something that could be special if they make the right moves. And so bringing the Kraken here and then showing, like, hey, we're willing to throw a lot of money at this NBA. We are willing to throw a lot of money at something we want, I think is kind of a perfect thing to say on a big stage. I just wish that, and Curtis and I were talking about this, I just wish that you could have swapped this one for the nationally televised ESPN game between the Golden Knights. Like, I wish that that would have been the home opener.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got, what, 5 games to go off of now, and we all kind of have opinions about what the Kraken are after this road trip, and maybe they haven't necessarily lived up to expectations. It would have been great to just have kicked off the season at home.
Right.
Before you have these thoughts about the team that may not have you as excited as you were on opening night.
Correct. I do fully agree there. I'm with you on that, but still, it's still early on enough where you see how it's unfolded the first 5 games, but there's still plenty to be excited about. There's still plenty of hope still there, but I still think it's going to be wild and fantastic, and I'm going to be so jealous of everybody that's going to be there to experience that.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number 2, the Huskies look to avoid their most embarrassing loss of the season on tonight against a winless Arizona team. Bear down. What's the real headline?
Curtis, this one's for you. A key to the Huskies' win tonight, just let Arizona barf all over themselves.
Hey.
That was a Curtis-inspired headline. It's very
Curtis
language.
That's how it's worked for the last 18 games
exactly.
Now. Arizona's lost 18 in a row, the longest losing streak in the country.
It's exactly what Curtis always says about this team, and
they're just so bad.
Turned it into a headline.
I'm talking about Arizona here when I say they're so bad.
Well,
now, the Huskies are also bad.
But Arizona's bad.
Like,
that's
they're
the thing.
So
like
bad.
Drop an octave or
Arizona's
two.
Arizona's never really been a dominant team. They've had moments, right? They've had their moments.
Few.
But it's like they've always been competitive at least. You know,
not anymore.
Now they're not even competitive. How? It's just kind of sad to me.
They got shut out against a 1-win Colorado team last week.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
They're also last in pretty much every category. Didn't we look up points per game as something absurd?
Yeah, they have not scored more than 19 in a game.
Curtis,
this season.
How long do they get? How long is the leash for Jed Fish to, you know, turn the program around?
I'm already out on Jed Fish, but I don't pull the strings over there in that athletic department.
You don't?
Unfortunately,
I thought
you
were the one that was flexing all the
booster
money.
If I did, people would get fired after 2 games all sports.
Yes, no matter what. They're like, wait, Curtis, this is just a spring game.
No, you're out. Get out of here.
Get them out.
We're playing ourselves.
Well, the standard of excellence certainly would be higher than what it is right now.
With that being said, if the Huskies do lose tonight. I mean,
I am not.
Is there a
loss?
How big is the panic button after that?
Huge.
There is no panic button.
It is
explosion. It is tear everything.
Oh, you're saying
down.
It's
you
the big
are,
red button that says like detonate in case of emergency.
Yes. Like there's nothing to panic about. It's already happened, right? I mean, that would be an implosion like we have never seen before, and I wouldn't even let Jimmy Lake get on the plane with the rest of his staff at that point. That is not going to happen, but man, if it did, whew, man, that would be bad, bad news.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number 3, future Mariners Hall of Famer Chris Taylor tied a postseason record with 3 home runs in 1 game as the Dodgers avoided elimination against our Atlanta Braves. What's the real headline?
I'm going to change 2 words here, but very important ones. Upcoming free agent ties postseason record with 3 home runs in 1 game. Would you guys make a move?
Chris Taylor coming back?
Absolutely.
The worst trade Jerry DePoto has ever made. You can undo it in free agency.
The one that got away?
The one that it didn't get away. The one that you sent away. The one that you shipped away for Zach Lee.
True. I wonder how he would feel about that coming back potentially. I mean, certainly would be interesting. I'd be definitely intrigued by that. But, you know, if you're going to ask me about the guys, the candidates that I would love to have, Chris Taylor, I would definitely not be mad at, not in the slightest. But I would hope that they would bring in someone bigger. You know, I want to see them come in, and I want them to go
Correa,
after
Semien.
Exactly. Yeah. Baez, like the two that I want. I mean, I would be shocked if Correa came here, to be quite honest with you. The two that I am hoping would be Baez and Semien. Those are the two guys I'd want. But like underneath that, if you got Chris Taylor, if you weren't able to get those guys, you got Chris Taylor, that'd be a pretty solid get.
Have Taylor play second base.
Yeah.
You've got JP at short. That's a really good middle infield.
Yes, it is.
You got to figure out third.
You do.
But
that would leave you. I mean, you have plenty of money, so this is it.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be one.
But what if you, in a fantasy world, what if you went after, you got, okay, so you don't get the Moon, you don't get Marcus Semien, you don't get Javi Baez, which, gosh, I hope happens. You get Chris Taylor, and then you bring on Trevor Story to play third base.
Ooh.
Okay. I would count Trevor Story as one of the premier available.
Oh, yeah, you're probably going to have to get, I think Story will command at least $20 million per.
Yeah.
Fine. I don't know if he'll get a contract that's going to be as long as a guy like Correa will get.
Yeah.
Story would probably get, I think, maximum 4 years. But, look,
good.
I'd be more than willing to pay $20 million.
This from the 509, though. If Chris Taylor is the Mariners' big acquisition this offseason, I will barf all over myself.
No, I agree. That's why. That's what I mean. Is
like he
that's
can't be
talking.
The offseason acquisition.
He's not the piece, but if he was one of multiple pieces, I mean, man, I'd be okay with that, but it would have to be Chris Taylor and a bunch of other really good pieces. That's why my two that I want that I'm starring is Marcus Semien and Javi Baez, and you better be one of the last people with that paddle, you know, in those sweepstakes.
Craig texting in, forget I'm doing some radio friendly language. Forget Correa. I'm sure most of Seattle wants nothing to do with a cheater. You know what?
That
though?
Can be forgiven.
I can be.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
That
I will hate
forgiven.
On the Astros. I will hate on any other team. The Red Sox. All day, all night, until one of the players comes here, and then I'm going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I have always loved Jose Altuve.
If Correa became a Mariner, all the sins of the past would be forgiven. We will grant him.
Oh, I'd be like, you know what? The Astros, they won that, and they didn't even need
it. It's all circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, well, what I would say is that, you know, there's no way that Carlos Correa would have been a part of any of that. I mean, he probably was the one guy that was saying, hey, no, guys, don't do that. Don't. Yeah, that's... If Correa was a Mariner, that's the line I'm going to go.
All right, we've got lots of NHL and Kraken talk coming up a bit later in the show. Going to stick with the NHL, though, because the professor, John Clayton, joins us next. We'll talk about what's in store for a big Week 7.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, taking a look at Week 7 in the NFL with the professor, John Clayton, on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, John.
How are we doing?
We're well, thank you. We are looking, obviously, at the Seahawks, but I want to take a little bit of a look around the rest of the league, too. So I'll start with Seattle first. Bobby Wagner, in a press conference yesterday, said this team's start is similar, he feels, to 2015, where they also got off to a slow start and still made the postseason, implying they can still dig themselves out. Do you feel the same way?
They can, but this is going to be such an important game to dig out, because it's going to be tough against New Orleans. But if they can win this game, and the game is at home, which does help, you know, then they'll be, you know, 3-4 and then a chance. And realizing there's only six teams right now in the NFC that have winning records, that still opens up a spot, you know, for a team like Seattle to climb up there and get, you know, a seventh spot, maybe even a sixth spot. So, I mean, it's wide open enough for that to happen. But the key is right now is to get this win and, you know, win the games, because again, New Orleans is not a great team, but they're still going to be tough, particularly knowing that they have seven guys that are available to come back from the injured list. And so you don't know right now today what team you're going to face. But no, I tend to agree with Bobby. As long as they can get their defense back together, as long as they can get a running game going, and then, you know, get a couple wins with Geno Smith, you know, they'll win next week against Jacksonville, they can do this.
John, do you define this game as a must-win for them?
100%. Yeah, they have to win this game. Because, I mean, if you're 2-5, I mean, now you're really against the odds. Because that means that, you know, to get through the rest of the season, I mean, the margin of error is so thin that it's going to be tough to do, particularly in a division like that, and particularly in a you know, right now the fact that, you know, they've only played two division games. They still have two games against Arizona, one against San Francisco, you know, one against the Rams. And so, no, this is 100% must-win type of game.
We know that Rashad Penny will be back in this game. What are your expectations for him?
I don't know. I mean, I know he's a good neighbor because, again, he's like 15 houses away from me here in my complex. And, you know, so I know he's a good – because, when I was driving by him, I didn't stop to see him the other day. But, you know, he's talented, but he hasn't done anything in hardly a couple years. And so what do you expect? That's why it's so important that Alex Collins be available to be the starting running back because, I mean, he's so essential in what they need to do. And understand, even if Rashad Penny's playing well, the Saints, their game plan is to stop the run. They're one of the best teams in football in stopping the run. They put an emphasis in that. And so because of that, you know, it's like, you know, it's going to be tough for any team to be able to go. And particularly, you know, what you don't want to see is that in the first five games, the Saints have had the lead in all through the game. And because of that, they can concentrate on stopping the run and running the football from their side.
You know, John, with that being said, I mean, you look at obviously what this group can do and what they did in the second half of the Pittsburgh game, but are they built to be that kind of team to be able to declarative about running the football and wanting to do it and do it as often as they are talking about doing it against that type of team?
Well, I mean, maybe not against the Saints, but I think that you know, this is a team, as long as the offensive line plays well, that can run the football. Now, obviously, one concern is going to be Damian Lewis, who has that shoulder injury, and you don't know if he's going to be able to play, and he's so important because you take him out of the lineup and you see the problems that they have. And so it's like, you know, they need Damian Lewis to be there at the left guard position, and it's so important that he's there because, again, it's going to be very difficult. Because, again, you know, Marcus Davenport may be coming back for the Saints and all those different things might be there. But in the end, it's like they can be a good running team, not a great running team.
Do you think we'll see D'Eskridge here in the next week or so?
Hard to tell because, again, he's been on the concussion list for so long. It's like you got to really worry about that. And you're wondering, it's like, okay, it's gone this long. Are they just taking the position? It's like, okay, let's just get to the bye week and then let them have that extra week to rest and do all those different things. But you would hope because, again, if it's going to go like 6, 7, 8 weeks, then what you're looking at is like, that's not good.
No, it definitely isn't good. And John, somebody that's in a situation that isn't good right now that's very surprising is the Kansas City Chiefs. They're 3-3, and they face a Tennessee Titans team that just came off of a huge win against the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. What is your expectation for the Chiefs right now?
I still think they can bounce back. I mean, their big problem still remains on defense because they're not doing a good job in that regard. They're not getting the pass rush. I mean, Chris Jones has been hurt. You know, they've had all kind of different problems on defense. And then, you know, Patrick Mahomes has been uncharacteristic in throwing interceptions. I mean, what is it? In his last 14 games, he's had 13 interceptions. That doesn't happen with Patrick Mahomes. You know, he has the great ability, because I still think he's the best quarterback in the league, to bounce back. But right now, he's not playing his best football.
Hey, John, speaking of a look around the rest of the league, what'd you make of the Deshaun Watson to Miami rumors?
I think there's a validity to it because I think at some point, you know, the Houston being the worst run team in pro sports, you know, needs to at least find a way to get some value for him because, again, they're paying him $10.4 million to do nothing, and Miami's in a desperate situation. You know, Miami right now, 1-5, five-game losing streak, Tua not doing great. He's like, you got Chris Greer, the general manager, Brian Flores, the coach. They're in trouble. And so if you can get Watson, arguably the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the league, and you expect him to be able to play this year, I don't know about next year when the court cases go to a trial, is that, you know, I think that you know, he can maybe try to bail them out. If not, they're all in trouble.
John, I wanted to ask you about that because if Deshaun Watson gets traded, the Miami Dolphins end up playing him, right? The only reason why the NFL has been able to get away with this situation necessarily is because – Houston has had no interest in playing him, or Deshaun Watson has not wanted to play, more likely. But if he goes to Miami and they're going to play him, does the NFL step in? Do they put him on any exempt list during this time, or Do you see him being able to play?
I don't think so. I think they're taking the position. It's like they want to see what happens in court before they make a decision. And that's not going to happen till May to July next year, May to June, May, July, whenever it's going to be. Because, I mean, he doesn't even get deposed until February 22nd. And so it's like right now, I mean, you can only judge what is there on paper. And so I don't think they're going to take that position. I think they'll say, okay, we're not doing anything. We'll wait till next year. Because again, if he's found guilty next year, then he'll get suspended next year. Now, do you suspend him 2 years in a row? I'd say no.
He is the professor, John Clayton. Make sure you're looking for his latest on 710sports.com and listening every 10:30 on Friday when he joins us here. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.
All right, there are two positions where the starter for Monday night is still unknown when it comes to the Seahawks. We'll tell you who we think we should get the gig. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacy podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Jake, did you see that someone left us a review that said that had shrimp emoji?
Really?
Yeah.
No. So your life is complete now.
Yeah, I mean, technically, would we call it a nightmare?
It's a dream nightmare come true.
I would say a nightmare come true, but in a good way.
Keep leaving the shrimp emojis, by the way.
I had a dream that someone left us a review that had shrimp emoji, and then I talked about it on air.
Yes.
And then someone actually did it. It was funny.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Five-star reviews only.
5 stars only.
Plus shrimp emojis. That's all we ask.
The Seahawks have a decision to make about two positions this Monday, depending on who's going to start. So we're looking at corner and we're looking at running back, where we've got to figure out who's going to be the starter. The two people competing at cornerback, Trey Brown and Sidney Jones. Sidney Jones left the game with an injury. Trey Brown has been getting some more practice reps this week. Pete Carroll has not confirmed who's going to start, but asked about Trey Brown's work, he said this.
Well, Trey's going to get a lot of reps with Sidney being a little slowed down. And I feel very comfortable about him playing. And so he's going to play in the game for sure.
So he's going to play in the game for sure. Didn't commit to him starting. So that's one position. Before we get to the next one, let's just talk about whether we think that Trey Brown should start. I think that Trey Brown in a full game is going to make rookie mistakes. I think that what we saw in a very limited half from him was really exciting and really promising, but it doesn't mean that he's like the second coming of some great cornerback. Like, I think he's going to make mistakes. He's a young guy. He's a first year player. He's playing his first ever NFL snaps. I mean, not really, but I mean, this year he certainly is.
Yeah.
That said, he was targeted 5 times, allowed just 2 completions. Those 2 completions amounted to just 9 yards. It was a great performance.
It was a great performance. But he wasn't, to your point, he wasn't out there on an island all game long. And you get to really get a sense for who Trey Brown is and what he can really do and all that. And you don't expect that for his first opportunity out there in an NFL game as a rookie. So it's coming off of IR. So to me, with Trey Brown, he's flashed enough to get you excited about what he can do. And quite honestly, I think you do start him. I think that you allow him to be the full-time starter in this game. If you want to mix in Sidney Jones a little bit, sure, but also with the banged up Sidney Jones, who has been making a lot of mental errors out there on the field, putting your team in tough positions. Yeah, you go with the hot hand. You go with somebody that you are excited about the performance that they made, and see what you really, really have in Trey Brown. And I think that you make this decision, start him, and hope that you don't have to look back again at that decision. The thing that stands out to me about Trey Brown is that he is confident. And it's not just confidence in himself or, being, boisterous and things of that nature that just come inherently with being a DB, with being a corner. But it's the confidence to trust himself, the confidence to trust his instincts and be aggressive. And that is in the run game. And that's also, in open field tackling. And that is also in, pass coverage. And to your point, is that going to get him beat from time to time? Yeah, I would assume it will. But I can't. You don't have the luxury of trying to play this thing scared. If you're the Seattle Seahawks, you need answers, you need solutions, and you need to find them now. And that's why I would be giving Trey Brown every opportunity to be that answer to our current problem.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Trey Brown starting. I'm keeping in mind that as promising as his appearance was, and honestly, as much as I enjoyed his post-game press conference, that he's probably going to make rookie mistakes, and that it doesn't mean all is lost. I just think that it is not an easy decision for coaches to make. I think that people always think these decisions are much easier than they really are.
Keep your expectations in check.
The second position is with running back. So Pete Carroll has made it clear this team wants a more balanced approach on offense. They want to run the ball more, and that is against even a number two ranked rushing defense this week. It doesn't matter. They know that they need a balanced approach, and they need to take some pressure off of Geno, so they're going to be running the ball. Problem is, they don't have Chris Carson. They know they won't have Chris Carson. He's on the injured reserve. So instead, they're going to have Alex Collins, Rashad Penny, and then obviously you've got DJ Dallas and Travis Homer. Now, really, the two running backs you're looking at as your every down backs are Rashad Penny, who's coming back. This is going to be his first game back from IR. Mm-hmm. And then Alex Collins, who had a fantastic game last week, but was pulled late from the game with a hip injury. So I'll start with this. This was Pete Carroll on the Pete Carroll preview, asked about Collins and Damian Lewis is included here, but pay attention to what he says about Alex Collins.
Alex and Damian were able to do a little bit of walkthrough on the first day of the week, and both planned to play in the game. We'll need to see how Damian and really Alex can handle the work once they get going in a couple days into the week. So we don't know, but both those guys have an optimistic outlook at it and think they're going to make it.
Okay, so Alex Collins thinks he's going to make it. There's an optimistic outlook. They're going to have to see how he comes around, though. Again, he's dealing with a hip and glute injury, I believe, to the same side. On the other hand, you've got Rashad Penny, who is presumably healthy. In fact, Pete Carroll says he's ready to come roaring back.
I'm really excited to get Rashad on the field and playing for us. He's gunning to go. He's ready. This is the right time for him to come roaring back, and I'm hoping that he'll have a chance to be a big factor in the game. And Alex is playing great football. Alex was able to practice today. Competition is a beautiful thing. So you'll see how we do it. I've got to get through the week and find out. And Rashad hasn't practiced in a long time, so we've got to see how he looks. But I know he's physically fit. He has not been practicing just rehabbing, working out to rehab. He's been working out to be in great shape and ready for the moment we can bring him back. So we've talked specifically about that throughout the return time and the return opportunity, and he's ready to go.
So here's my question. Do you start a hobbled Alex Collins over a healthy Rashad Penny?
Well, it just depends, obviously, how hurt Alex Collins is. And that's something that they're evaluating during the week. But if they think that he is, and Alex Collins feels like he's ready to go and give it a shot, you start Alex Collins. He has made really good decisions. He's put you in good spots. The one thing that I have really liked about Alex Collins is that, he may not be as physically gifted in terms of, big play ability, but he has been extremely savvy and smart with when to cut back, when to hit the hole, and make really good decisions and make the offensive line right. And that is a key part of needing a successful running game, where Rashad Penny, you ease him into the game, and does he eventually take over? Potentially, and that would be, I think, very ideal if you're thinking about it from a Pete Carroll perspective. But I just believe that if Alex Collins is getting himself ready to go, that you give him the first crack at it and see what he is really able to do, and then allow Rashad Penny to come in. If Rashad Penny is starting from the get-go, to me, that tells me everything I need to know in terms of, where Alex Collins' health status really lies.
All right. It is a huge weekend for the Seattle Kraken, who are welcoming fans to their home opener on Saturday. ESPN NHL analyst Ray Ferraro going to join us at noon. First, though, Bobby Wagner was asked about this year's tough start and brought up a comparison that's getting a lot of people talking. We'll tell you what he said next.